and you're on the front porch. This week, we're going to be talking about Alice Cooper. Why? Because Rick Wilson just went to his concert, and it's about idols of our youth. Find out who the idols are for Rick, for Lori, and for myself. And then we're going to talk about what should be free in the world, and especially what should government provide its people for free? Anything? Support for the Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette Mail and its CGM app. You can get the latest news, traffic, and weather about West Virginia. It's in the App Store or wherever you find your apps. Check it out.
First of all, let me just say welcome to my nightmare, Scott. Alice Cooper was one of the major idols of my youth. He was like a divine presence, a revelation of rebelliousness and humor and shock rock and everything else. And can I confess to a crime legally committed? I asked my co-conspirator, Kenny Mercer, Milton Junior High School, rock on. We went to an Alice concert in Charleston decades ago. We were in junior high, and Kenny had the idea, let's get an Alice Cooper poster and sign his name on it and tell everyone at school that we hung with Alice and stuff. And it was a pathetic effort, you know, to like make some traction. It didn't quite get anywhere, but I am so glad we did it. Kenny, I'd do it again, buddy.
So how was the concert? Did it take you back to your youth? Was it everything you dreamed of?
Everything I dreamed of. We're talking snakes. We're talking Frankenstein.
Snakes, live
the
snakes.
Guillotine. You know, Alice was beheaded. Who else can like get executed and then come back from the dead every concert? He kind of wears a big boa for Welcome to My Nightmare. He even did that on The Muppet Show, by the way. So.
And how old is he now?
He is 69 years old, and he is still fit, jumping around the stage with all his props and getting. How many 69-year-olds can get their head cut off and just come right back and do, I want to be elected, you know?
So my question here is, why?
Believe it or not, at one point in my life, I was kind of rebellious. Something really liberating about him, the way he sort of transgressed boundaries, and he had me with schools out. You know, you're going to school, and... And the thing I like about that song is that there's like, it's crazy, but it also has a little humility. Like, we got no class, we got no principles, we got no innocence, we can't even think of a word that rhymes. I mean, that's pretty good, right?
So it's funny because you walk this line. I think you look at your life and you're someone who's devoted your life to community, to taking care of each other. Alice Cooper seems to argue for, you know, chaos and freedom.
Yeah. Well, actually, the organization I work for just turned 100. We just celebrated our centennial, and I'm trying to encourage them to adopt No More Mr. Nice Guys, the official song, although I've hit some resistance in Quaker
This is the American
circles.
Friends Service Committee. These are the Quakers.
Yeah.
So. What do the Quakers think when you talk about No More Mr. Nice Guy?
They usually look down, you know, and just kind of get embarrassed. But I want to talk about you guys. I mean, that's one of the idols. I mean, I have a couple others. Lori, you are on. Come on.
Margaret Thatcher. That was definitely one growing up, you know, in the 80s. A woman, a strong woman. I love the fact that her gender, her sex was almost incidental. In fact, you know, the left feminists really disliked her. She shattered the glass ceiling in Britain decades before we, you know, even talked about Hillary Clinton. And so I loved that. I think probably my biggest idol was another woman, Peggy Noonan, the Reagan speechwriter, who just recently won a Pulitzer for commentary. I loved her. I read her book about working in the Reagan White House. Made me want to be a speechwriter, which is a dream I still have never achieved. Probably Agatha Christie, another woman. All my idols are women. Just as far as somebody who so skilled at... You will not find a better plot writer than Agatha Christie. You will not find anyone who can fool you as well. And I am one of the people who actually rereads Agatha Christie books knowing the endings just because I get a lot of enjoyment out of seeing how she crafts the stories.
So I'm still interested in what's going on with you and Margaret Thatcher. And even Peggy Noonan. I mean, these are women of the 80s. Were you like... 6 years old and reading Peggy Noonan's columns. And like talk about your first impressions of these women and why they impressed you.
Maybe you just complimented me by telling me that I'm actually younger. I look younger than I am. I was probably 12 or 13 when I read Peggy Noonan's book, which is very young to be reading a political memoir, I will grant you. But I definitely was a little bit older than six. Yeah, we didn't have a TV growing up. We were one of those weird families. So my kind of experience of pop culture was not all that maybe a normal child of the 80s would have been. I was kind of doing different things. So, yeah, that was how I got into it. And then I studied later. Some of the Thatcher stuff is not so much childhood, but I studied her a lot in college and modern British politics a lot. And so a lot of my appreciation, you know, admittedly, is looking back from that perspective. I don't know if in 1980 I was really that much of a Thatcher fan.
I have two other idols I want to just mention.
Please.
My other two idols, big ones, one was Bruce Lee, who is still my idol. Studied philosophy at the University of Washington, very literate in Taoism and all that, and J.R.R. Tolkien. So Alice Cooper, Bruce Lee, and Tolkien, I had impeccable taste in the eighth grade. Let me just say that.
So the people you look up to when you're in that sort of eighth grade area, those are the folks that you really keep with you all your life.
Still there.
I should throw in there, actually, there's a listener to the Front Porch podcast that was one of my early idols, and it's Mr. Lippold, our speech and English teacher in Creston, Iowa. My parents didn't go to college, but I always really just loved books, loved reading and writing. I remember I would stay after school and talk about these things with Mr. Lippold for just hours. He would listen, listen to this 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid. I don't even think that people like Mr. Lippold understand fully really get the impact they have on kids' lives. And so if you're listening to Mr. Lippold, you're my idol. Thank you, man. Appreciate
we like
it.
To thank everyone who's fed our Frankenstein over the years, right, guys? So I got one more bone to pick. I'm not ready to go before we get off this. I have a feeling, Scott, that like if Ashton Mara or Roxy Todd were running public radio, they could have got me backstage with Alice. You did not even really try, and I'm not going to let that go anytime soon. So
I think there are a lot of things that could be better and different about public broadcasting. I also think it's unlikely we'd be doing this podcast right now if they were in charge, but they're not. Thank goodness for that. All right, we're going to take a break, unless you have a Bible verse related to idols. And well, there are two types of idols, aren't there?
There are. Well, there's a verse and a story. Of course, one easy one is make a joyful noise unto the Lord. That's Psalm 100. And the other is the story in Exodus when Moses came down off Sinai. He glowed so much they had to put a, veil over his face. And I'm not comparing Alice to the deity or anything, but I am a little bit radiant today, would you say?
But shouldn't you say, thou shalt have no other gods besides me?
Well, yeah, but the Bible's a big book. You pick your verse, I'll pick mine.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, what, if anything, should the government provide people for free? But first...
Hey, I'm Rick Wilson.
I'm Laurie Lynn, and we are on the front porch.
There are quite a few things we may not agree on.
Unions.
Prevailing wage, right to work.
The coal industry.
Oh, I got one. Reagan versus Roosevelt.
Teddy Kennedy.
I respect you so much that I've stopped referring to Reagan as the Antichrist in your presence.
And you brought me an olive branch from the Garden of Gethsemane.
Where Jesus prayed.
Which is awesome.
We're grateful to West Virginia Public Broadcasting for giving us a place to discuss issues of West Virginia. And we think it's a great service.
It's been fantastic. We're not ranting at each other. We're talking to each other and people are listening. I appreciate it so much.
We've shamelessly tried to get Tudor's Biscuit World to fund a program that hasn't happened yet. That's why we're relying on you, West Virginia, to support West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Keep us off the streets.
Exactly.
West Virginia has some of the most beautiful state parks in the country. We've talked about that before. There was a story that came out just a couple of days ago that said that the state parks were going to start charging admission. Not all of them, just some of them. Some of the more popular ones are the ones that have easier access. Babcock, Blackwater Falls, some of our most beautiful popular parks. The access fees were $2, and you could also get a pass for like $12 that would get you in for the full year. Well, just last night, Governor Justice came out with a press release saying that he did not know that this was going to happen. He was not told, and he's decided this is a bad idea and that they're not going to do this pilot program after all and not going to charge to get into the parks. Is this something that should be free to all West Virginians, or is it reasonable to ask people to pay some sort of use fee?
Well, people do pay a certain amount just in terms of their taxes, but in return they receive this public good, which really adds a lot to the quality of life in West Virginia.
Well, so a lot of the things that government provides us, they can't charge us for, right? So like national defense, you can't charge me different from what you charge Rick, for example, to be defended from the Russians here in Charleston, West Virginia. Or the lighthouse is a classic example. You can't charge some ships for the light and not others. You know, ideally, from an economic perspective, we want people to be paying for the things that they use. And so, you know, to the extent that the park thing is that, I don't think there's a whole lot wrong with it. I mean, when you talk about things that we are requiring people to do, for example, we require parents to see that their children get an education, right? I think having free public education is, you know, something that we want government to do. You don't want to charge people to have, you know, police protection, right? If the police come and get somebody off your lawn that's trying to get into your house, you know, you don't want to then get a bill for $200, I wouldn't think.
You know, the state parks bring a lot of people to West Virginia and indirectly contribute to the economy. Let's just go to Babcock. That's a state park I'm really fond of. It was my mother's favorite park. I usually run the Gristmill Grinder there every year in April, a half marathon. A lot of people just come there and park at the mill and look at it. It's one of the most photographed places in the state. You know, and I think a lot of people maybe not be able to walk around or to hike or to go up and down some of the hills for all that, but you're just sitting there and, you know, taking in the beauty and the scenery. It means a lot to people. And it's too bad they don't have a concession there where they don't sell more food or have some kind of restaurant at Babcock. I think a lot could be done to bring in money at these places.
Well, let's talk about the bigger issues because, you know, and I could be convinced that a small user fee could be a useful thing for the parks. What about libraries? You know, what about schools? So when I went to Central America and spent some time in Nicaragua, you know, at the time I was there, it was after the socialists had gotten out of power and they privatized almost everything. The schools were privatized. Kids had to pay tuition to go there. They had to have their own desks. So they literally, this was shocking to me, they carried their desks to and from school every day and they had to buy their own books and pencils. And if you couldn't afford it, you didn't go. There was police, but it was so ineffective that if you really wanted security, you hired your own private security. And I do find it interesting that we make assumptions like, well, of course the police have to be paid for by everybody. It's like, no, you could defund the police and then people can build gated communities to live behind if they want extra security. These are all choices that we make.
I think I have to say there's a lot of irony to Governor Justice kind of hammering away at this and saying West Virginians are struggling. I suspect if you looked at the demographics of people who use West Virginia state parks, those people are struggling less than a lot of West Virginians. And, you know, this is a governor who wants to increase tolls, increase the gas tax, increase the sales tax. I mean, people would be paying more at the grocery store in one trip in, you know, a sales tax increase than they would be spending on going to a state park. So I think, you know, if you're talking about struggling West Virginians, I think there's a little bit of irony there.
I think in paying, though, some more, say, in consumer taxes, if it keeps us from making drastic cuts to public education, to quality of life programs, to health programs like Medicaid that bring a 3-to-1 match, I think it's a good deal. I mean, and I do think there is a big agenda out here to privatize everything. I'm reminded of a couple jokes. You know, I used to be on our fire department in Milton. There's one of my favorite New Yorker cartoons is the guy's house is on fire and they roll up. And the guy says, no, thanks. I'm a libertarian. You know.
But what's your ideal solution for, say, roads? Should people pay for the roads that they actually drive? I mean, where do you stand on tolls, for example? Should we have more tolls, fewer tolls?
I don't know about the exact tolls on the interstate. With something like that, I think it's a matter of history. Once you've got it there, it's hard to get rid of it, and it's a basic thing. I do think roads, there's a benefit principle where people who travel more obviously pay more gasoline taxes and other things. And I think I don't have a problem with that.
But you have a problem with having entrance fees at Babcock.
Right.
Isn't people pay more who use it more? It's the same principle as a toll, isn't it?
Well, we don't have tolls on most of the roads in the state. I mean, most of the roads I go, there's not tolls. I live on a really tiny road, which was actually repaired probably, you know, a considerable effort by the state so people can drive on it now, and I appreciate that. That's one reason I live in a civilized society, you know.
And then you end up with this two-tiered society, a society where the good roads are for the rich people and the traffic jams are for the poor people. It sounds almost dystopian to me. That's the thing I worry about if we go too far down this road.
you can do that in a way that is the opposite of dystopian, which is what Washington, D.C. is how, which they created this inside the between the two lanes of the Beltway. There's this special road that is a toll road. You pay to drive on that. You have, you know, the little Easy Pass transponder, and it's not the same price every time. The worse the traffic is, the higher the price is. So if you really, really want to go and you really, really want to pay, you know, sometimes it's as much as like $12 at rush hour, you can get on that and go faster. So the people who really want to can do that. That takes traffic off of the main roads, right? So the poor people who don't want to pay the extra get a little bit less traffic on their road. And I mean, to me, that's a fantastic. And I've used it sometimes when I've really wanted to. Other times when I didn't really have to be somewhere, didn't want to pay the extra, I stayed on the main beltway and had a little bit more traffic. So to me, that's the opposite of dystopian. That's finding a way to improve everyone's situation by isolating, you know, the people who are willing to pay a little bit more and go a little bit faster.
Of course, you know, if we had more mass transit and public transportation available, that's another way of attacking it. It's interesting to me, like in the 1920s, we had this incredible system of rail where you could get anywhere from anywhere to anywhere in West Virginia on the rails. And that's something that we sort of left behind. Unintended consequence of the internal combustion engine, which has all these other unintended consequences.
I just don't want to see a society get to the point where you have such a difference. Everyone should be guaranteed a certain level of access to the public goods. And maybe, you know, $12 a year is not too much to ask anyone to enter all the state parks for a year. I'll give you that. The danger becomes if you start doing $10 a pop every time you go to a state park. Like when I grew up, my family, at the level of income we had growing up with five kids, we would have never gone to that state park. And that's not enough access.
Yeah, I think I would like to know a little bit more about how that went down. I mean, is imposing a fee to enter a park just something DNR can just spontaneously do? It seems like they would need some kind of authorization, whether it's, you know, from the legislature, which I don't think they had, or from the executive. I mean, did Tomlin put this in place a year ago? Who knows? I mean, Justice says he didn't know about it, and I take him at his word, but he seemed to be, you know, completely blown away by it. And I'm sure there are people who devoted hundreds of hours to this program, putting it in place. How are we going to do it? And all of a sudden, you know, as of last night, that's over.
I'm glad he did it. You know, just in the short term, I'm really glad he did it.
The one final thing I would say is, you know, we have a thing in the state about getting out of staters to pay for stuff. There's a not insignificant portion of that fee that would be paid by people from out of state. And so, you know, we are allowing people to come into our parks from out of state, use those resources essentially for free now. This would be a way of getting that back a little bit. I mean, Justice talks about how 70-odd% of the traffic on the turnpike and the tolls are being paid by out-of-staters. That's a justification for keeping the tolls there. This is a way to kind of recoup that from people who don't live here, who aren't paying for the parks.
And let me just say, as someone who has looked at state parks and been in state parks all over the country, the people that work in these state parks are spectacular folks. It's spectacular. So no matter how you feel about this issue, support the state parks in West Virginia.
I honeymooned at Holly River, by the way. And actually, you vacationed there, right, Lori?
Yep.
Oh, and I got married at Holly River.
Well, there you go.
All right. And that's the front porch. What song should we go out on?
Obviously, No More Mr. Nice Guy, right?
No More Mr. Nice Guy. The new theme I hear of your employer, the American Friends Service Committee.
I'm working on it. Haven't got too far yet, though.
That's Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. And Lori Lynn, our conservative columnist / lawyer. And I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening.